タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
This week we are chatting with Gretchen Hirsch. You might know her better as Gertie. We talk about her sewing journey from starting her sewing blog over a decade ago to now having her own patterns, books, and classes. Gertie shares her love for vintage glamour, embracing her style fantasy, and the behind-the-scenes process of making charm patterns.
The woman, the legend, Gertie! This episode of Love to Sew is sponsored by Spoonflower. Are you ready to create your ultimate dream wardrobe? Now's your chance with Spoonflower's Dream Wardrobe Giveaway. Enter now through November 19th for a chance to win a $500 shopping spree on Spoonflower.
What? Love to Sew listeners can enter the giveaway by going to try.spoonflower.com/love to sew to enter. That's try.spoonflower.com/love to sew. And now, on to the show.
Hello, Gretchen. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
We are thrilled to have you. I want to just tell you right off the bat that your sewing book was one of the first books I ever got, and your skirt was one of the first things I ever sewed when I got back into my sewing journey. So I think that I have to thank you, because now look at where I am with the podcast, my business, and yeah, I just really wanted to say that right off the bat, and thank you sincerely for everything.
Well, thank you. That means so much to me.
So can you please introduce yourself to our listeners now that I've gushed about you so much?
Absolutely. My name is Gretchen Hirsch. You may know me as Gertie. I got my start as a sewing blogger, I think 11 years ago now. And since then, I have started writing sewing books. I've written five now. I design patterns. I design for Butterick and Simplicity. I now have my own independent company called Charm Patterns. I have designed fabric, and I also teach dressmaking workshops.
Wow. We're going to try and talk about everything today. But first off, we always like to ask our guests how and when they learned how to sew.
Yeah, I love that. I love hearing about how people got started. For me, it was through my mom sewing. When I was a kid, I just remember having a sewing machine around a lot. Like, it was just a normal thing to have in the house. And she always made our Halloween costumes. And one of my favorite things that happened all year was that we would go to Joann's and I got to pick out the pattern and the fabric for my Halloween costume. And I always made really questionable choices. Like, I was like Piglet one year and a mouse. I was never anything cool. You know what I mean? Like, I was Princess Diana one year, so because I just wanted like a peach satin ball gown. So she made that for me. And so I kind of learned through her. I remember like very vividly the things that she told me, like you never turn the hand wheel backwards and you always have to pull the thread out through the needle, not from the top of the machine. Like, I still remember those things, but I was probably really young. She enrolled me in a garment sewing class when I was probably 8 years old, and we made vests and matching hammer pants, and I made mine in blue seersucker, and it was awful. And I still have the picture to prove it, but it kind of turned me off.
Can we have that picture?
maybe. Let me think about it. Okay. Yeah, that kind of turned me off garment sewing. And I didn't get back into it until I was in my 20s. And I had a whole career in children's book publishing. And I really wanted to wear more vintage. And that was kind of the impetus for me, was that I would go vintage shopping and I didn't feel like anything fit really well or it was too expensive. So I started collecting vintage sewing patterns. And I was like, well, I have this sewing background. I'm just going to pull out that old like 70s era Singer and see if I can do this again. And here we are.
That is amazing. What was it that made you want to dress in the more vintage style?
I've just always really liked 50s era specifically. Like, I love the silhouettes. I love how feminine it is. And it just always really appealed to me. Like, even as a little girl, I loved movies like Annie. As I was older, I loved Dirty Dancing. that was my intro to vintage on a certain level. I was like, wait, what's going on here? Like, I need to know more about this style. And it was just sort of an obsession with getting that look. And I just felt really frustrated, like I said, by the process of trying to buy actual vintage. And I think the process of trying to find exactly what I wanted in my size is not really what vintage shopping is about. It's about like the thrill of the hunt, mm-hmm. you know? And so I could never find the thing that I wanted. So I just wanted to make it happen. Just that sort of like creative, I guess, maker spirit that we all have in common.
Yes, it's so true.
And since you picked up sewing again in your 20s, you've accomplished so many things in the sewing world. And we kind of wanted you to walk us through the journey of your brand and how it all got started.
Yeah, I would love to. So the first thing I did in this world was to start a sewing blog. And that was 11 years ago now. And that was at a time when there weren't a ton of sewing blogs out there. I was kind of sewing on my own. I had just gotten laid off of one of my publishing jobs at HarperCollins, and I just felt like I had all this time on my hands and I was going to spend it sewing, but I just felt like I was like lacking connection and, you know, sharing what I was doing with other people. So at that time, I became pretty obsessed with this book called Vogue's New Book for Better Sewing, which was published in 1952. And it was sort of a supplemental book to Vogue Patterns. And it contained a collection. It didn't have the patterns in it like we think of sewing books now. You had to go buy the patterns separately. But it was 14 Vogue patterns. And the idea was that they gave you, they sort of held your hand through the sewing of these 14 patterns. Because if you've ever tried to use a vintage sewing pattern before, you know that the instructions are pretty minimal. So it was kind of holding your hand and telling you how to make, you know, the gathered skirt, the little bolero, the shirt dress. And it went on to like an evening gown and a tailored suit and a coat. So my idea at the time, and, you know, I think this is such an interesting sort of like era in blogging and in, you know, books, is that it was like the era of Julie and Julia, you know, where people were sort of like doing an experiment, like, I'm going to do everything in this book. I'm going to sew all these things. I'm going to like cook all these things, whatever it was. So for me, I was really inspired by that idea. And I took this book, Vogue's New Book for Better Sewing, and I said, I'm going to collect all these patterns and sew them all on my blog. So I called the blog Gertie's New Blog for Better Sewing, based on that book. And I just started sewing my way through it and writing about what I was learning about vintage construction and vintage patterns. And I also have to tell you that I was blogging every day at that time, which, like, looking back on it, I just don't know how I had the energy for that, but I was really blogging every day and eventually working full time again. But it speaks to me now because it shows what a drive I had to share what I was doing with people. Because now it just sounds exhausting to me, but it didn't feel exhausting at the time. It was like, I really wanted to share what I was doing. And so from there, I blogged for about a year every day. And that was my goal, was to build up a year's worth of like daily content. And that was when I heard from a literary agent who said she really liked my blog and would I be interested in turning it into a book. So from there, we shaped the proposal for my first book, Gertie's New Book for Better Sewing. And that took a long time, just figuring out what would a book based on a sewing blog look like. That first book was the first time I really designed patterns, and it was like this huge, ambitious book about vintage dressmaking based on what I'd learned from Vogue's New Book for Better Sewing. My next book was Gertie Sews Vintage Casual, which was a sort of response to people feeling like, you know, they loved the look, but this was not an everyday wardrobe for them, you know, like what are they going to wear to walk the dog or pick their kid up from daycare. I've also since published a sketchbook called Gertie's New Fashion Sketchbook with sort of realistic body type croquis. And from there, I did Gertie's Ultimate Dress Book, which was another hugely ambitious book all about the ins and outs of vintage style dressmaking with a collection of interchangeable patterns. And then my latest book was Gertie Sews Jiffy Dresses, which came out just this April, which I didn't really have anything in my library for beginners or for people who didn't have a ton of time to sew. So that was sort of filling that need of, you know, projects that were quicker, more accessible to beginners, but still had a really beautiful vintage silhouette. So I think those are all the books.
I think so too. We have them written out here and you nailed it.
I did? Okay. Yeah. I had this sudden like wave of fear midway that I was forgetting one. So, all right, good. So that was the books. And then kind of in the middle of all that, I had the idea to start a pattern line. And I remember thinking, you know, this was at the time when indies were really sort of gaining popularity. And I thought I would love to do something like that. And in the end, I'm so glad I didn't because I had no idea what I was doing. And what I ended up doing was approaching McCall's, like Butter McCall's Vogue, you know, which was all one company at the time, to see if they would be interested in doing a licensed pattern line with me so that I would sort of be, you know, a line within their main brand. And they were so into it. It was great. I mean, looking back, that was a really funny conversation because I don't think they'd ever had anything from a blogger before. And I went in and just said, like, I'm a blogger, you know, I've written a sewing book. Would you be interested in doing patterns with me? And they were like, yeah, let's do it. You know, and it was just like, they were so on board. And I've been working with Butterick, you know, I worked with them for 6 years and did over 30 patterns with them in a line called Patterns by Gertie, where I designed the patterns and then they kind of took it from there and, you know, did all the grading and packaging, marketing, et cetera. Okay, so that was Butterick. And then last year, they moved me over to Simplicity. So I did 2 patterns with Simplicity. And that is still in process. So I'm not really sure where that line is going right now, but that is, you know, we still have a great relationship. From there, from the Butterick line, I then started designing fabric. So I worked with a company called Fabric Traditions who sold to places like Joann's and Spotlight Stores, which is in Australia, New Zealand. And they picked up my line of fabric. And Joann's had my line for several years, and it was all vintage-inspired garment fabrics. Spotlight still carries it. After Joann's dropped the line, I started working with Michael Miller so that I could still do fabric here in the US. And I've done 2 lines with Michael Miller, which is all quilting cottons, again, with a vintage theme. And so throughout all of this, let's see, what's the thing I did next? Oh, Charm Patterns. 2 years ago, I started Charm Patterns, which is my own independent line. So that was kind of the dream from the beginning and really something I felt like I was only able to do about 2 years ago, where I really felt confident enough in what I was doing to be able to go indie. And so that is my main focus right now is designing patterns for Charm Patterns. And I also teach. So I started teaching sewing, you know, back in the early days of my blog. I was teaching beginner sewing in New York City when I lived there. And over the past few years, I've just started offering these, you know, 2 or 3 day dressmaking workshops where we do intensive fitting and construction from one of my patterns. And I do them in my hometown of Beacon, New York. And I also travel all around the world and teach them. So I would say that my main focus these days is sort of split between teaching and charm patterns.
Wow. It is truly incredible, all of the things that you've accomplished over the last 11 years. I mean, wow, taking us through that whole journey, that was amazing. We have so many questions.
We do. Early in the conversation, you mentioned starting your blog 11 yeah. years ago and kind of like deciding to get into that space. And I sort of want to start there. Can you take us back to that time in the sewing community and kind of tell us about what it was like back then and what people were sharing online? Like, what was the community like 10 years ago?
Yeah, totally. It was really different. When I first started blogging, like I said, I didn't feel like there were a ton of sewing blogs out there. There were a lot of knitting blogs and there were a lot of personal blogs where people were sort of writing about their day-to-day life. Yeah, it was the era of, you know, bloggers turned authors. So people were really sharing a lot online. And so when I started, I mean, I think I was, like, as I mentioned, I was kind of in a vulnerable personal place. Like, I had just lost my job at HarperCollins. And I was just, you know, I remember thinking, like, this is going to be amazing. I'm just going to, you know, while I'm job searching, I'm just going to, like, sew all day. You know, I don't have anywhere to be. Like, this is going to be awesome. And then just really feeling like it wasn't as awesome as I anticipated because I was just lacking connection. Like, I didn't know anyone who sewed. And I just felt like the best way I can put it is a lack of connection. And so I just started posting things that I was making and the things I was making from the Vogue book. And it felt so different from today's like super polished Instagram world because none of us knew what we were doing. And there was never an expectation that we should know what we were doing because it was all kind of new. And I remember, you know, my process of taking photos was I had this little point and shoot camera that I got at the drugstore. And I would put it on top of a pile of books on my coffee table and it had a timer and I would try to take pictures that way. I never edited my photos. Like they were all like the lighting was highly questionable in all of them. I didn't really do my hair. Like, I don't know. I tried to look cute, but like, I just didn't, it wasn't about like how I looked. And I felt sort of like, it felt very, I mean, not that I feel inauthentic now, but it just, there was like a very authentic part of it where we weren't constantly like consumed with like, do I have to look perfect for this Instagram shot? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And getting everything perfect too. I feel like now there's an expectation that anything you write in a blog post is like perfect information and that, you know, you never get anything wrong. But of course we do. And, right. And I'm sure people did back then as well. So that's probably shifted a lot too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's the other part of it is that, you know, blogging is more of a long content sort of form. And, you know, I was writing tutorials and like really doing a lot. We were doing like really long form content that, you know, I don't think exists quite as much now because people are more focused on this short form content, which is great too. But yeah, it was just kind of it was a different time, as I say, and it was really cool. And I'm like, I'm really glad I was a part of it. But yeah, things have changed a lot.
And do you feel like going through kind of that blogging process and those sort of long form posts and really putting a lot of information in there, did you learn a lot about sewing during this time? Do you feel like this was like a period of growth for you in terms of like your sewing practice and your skills?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it was like a period of extreme curiosity for me. I was really at that point. I mean, it's sort of a misconception that I didn't know how to sew at all when I started my blog. I did know how to sew, but I was really sort of delving into vintage techniques and really sort of high-end and couture garment techniques for the first time. So that's what I was learning. And I had this sense of like, I was reading a lot like about sewing. Like I had the whole Threads library, you know, hard copies of those old magazines that I bought on eBay. I had all these vintage sewing books and I was just reading and like was just really excited about what I was learning. So I was just taking it and sharing it. So I forget what the question was, but did I answer it?
Yes, you did.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, we were wondering if there were any particular projects that you worked on or techniques that you learned about that were real aha moments for you where your sewing just took an amazing growth leap and got you to the next level?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think everything I was kind of working on at the time, you know, using horsehair braid and hems was one thing that I learned about that I shared that I really loved. And it's funny because now I don't really do it anymore and I kind of can't get away from those techniques because people ask me about it all the time. And I'm like, well, I'm not really that into it anymore, but I can tell you how to do it. Or, you know, things like learning about tailoring. You know, I did some videos on how to do pad stitching, learning about spiral steel boning. I mean, I think all of those sort of advanced garment techniques that I was learning about are like the foundation of what I do today. And that's what I was learning at the time.
And what about the people that were following you and interested in what you were posting? Were you surprised by the number of people that started following you right off the bat? And who are these people?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's, you know, when you start a blog, you pretty much think it's going to be just your mom reading what you wrote. And it was for a while. And but then I think the thing I was the most surprised by was the level of engagement. You know, not only was I writing about sewing tutorials, but I became really interested in sort of the relationship between sewing and gender and feminism and all these sort of bigger questions. And so I started writing about that. I remember the first post I wrote sort of in that line of thinking was called Sewing and Gender Politics, I think is what it was called. And that was one of the first posts I wrote that got over 100 comments. And I remember thinking like, wow, people aren't just engaging, but they're engaging thoughtfully and passionately. And that was what really surprised me. And the thing that I always loved most about my blog audience was that they just were really engaged and really, really thoughtful in their responses.
And I'm curious how you feel about the relationship between sewing and gender now.
It's so interesting. I mean, I think what prompted that question and the reason I started writing about it was that, so I was blogging this book from 1952 and writing about things exclusively from that era. And one of the comments that I got on one of my early posts was someone saying that they didn't understand why I would be so interested in this time period, like someone who considered herself a feminist. Why would I be so drawn to this era that was sort of, you know, famous for oppressing women? Mm-hmm. And I bristled a little bit at first, but then I thought, you know, that's actually a really interesting question. Like, can we, you know, separate the style from the time, from the politics? And in the end, I think, you know, we have to. You know, if I thought about everything that was going on politically at this time, you know, and was only interested in glorifying it, like I couldn't keep going doing what I do. But for me, I can say this was like a complicated era in our history that gave us a lot of really killer fashion. And that's what we're going to celebrate. And I think also the more I learn about this era, it was women driving a lot of what you see, like especially in the US, there were so many interesting designers like Claire McCardle, you know, this whole American movement of women designers that you didn't see in like the UK or like, you know, in the sort of Dior new look era that was sort of driven by men. But there was a lot going on with women. And so the interesting thing is that I think sewing is just such a historically feminine thing, you know, that it's something that women have been sort of made to learn how to do or wanted to learn how to do. And it's thought of as a girl's thing. And that's what makes it so special to me, I guess, is that it's something that was being driven by women and sort of sustained by women. And that I'm interested in what women did, you know, as a feminist. So that is why I find everything about sewing interesting and why I find it's still a feminist thing to do.
I totally agree. And I also think there's something about the act of sewing and learning how to make your own clothes that is taking control over your own style and your own body and the way that you want to present yourself to the world, which is an amazing and powerful thing that we all share as well. So yeah, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think just being able to say like, you know, I want this skirt in this color is something that you're having complete agency in your choices about how you're presenting yourself. And then to be the one who's also, you know, creating that item is just like a really powerful thing.
It really is. Yeah. I wanted to ask you also about kind of your blogging career over the years and how the content that you share on your blog has changed. And I wonder if there were any turning points that kind of changed the course of your sewing and blogging journey over the last decade.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I certainly turned away from blogging at a certain point. And I, you know, in my early days, I shared a lot about my personal life. And that suddenly at one point, like, just felt too much for me. You know, like, everyone was sort of sharing everything about their home lives. And, you know, everything was about, you know, in those early blogging days was about your own personal experience. And I think for me, like, I had a lot of shifts in my personal life to where I just didn't anymore feel comfortable being that out and open on the internet. And I had this sort of like natural shift away from blogging And it was so interesting. You know, I've talked about this before, but I experienced a lot of like guilt about not blogging the way I used to. And I think anyone who's been a blogger before can relate to blogger guilt because, you know, it's like this thing that needs your constant care and attention. And you feel like you're never giving it the attention it needs or that you feel like you should be giving it. And so I just sort of shifted away from my blog naturally. And then I kind of discovered what was going on Instagram at the time and started building up my following there. But I had this really weird experience looking back where I thought that I was the only person who did that and that like I was this like horrible blogger for not blogging anymore and then sort of turning to this new content or this new platform and then having this sort of aha moment where I realized that every single person did that too, sort of like shifted away from blogging quite as much and was now more active on Instagram. So it was kind of a relief to see that it was just, I was just sort of part of this, you know, natural movement and what was happening in social media.
It is true. It's very relatable, that whole idea of being super open on a blog and then kind of deciding to pull back and then discovering Instagram. And I think it is sort of a common thing that happens nowadays where we're sharing a lot and then we feel like we need to pull back a little bit and just kind of regroup a little bit in terms of what we are revealing to our followers. And I wonder how you kind of balance that now on Instagram with, you know, everybody's on stories and everybody's sharing all the time. And it is kind of, you know, I think we're in an era of just like sharing so much and being so open. And how do you sort of balance like keeping your personal life personal while still feeling like you're connecting with your audience?
Yeah, that's a really tough one. I mean, I think for me, sort of seeing sort of the shift in my life, which, you know, was that in my early blog days, I was like really open about like where I lived, my marriage, my family. Like there was just nothing that was, was like too inconsequential for me to share. You know, I don't think I was ever a super oversharer, but people saw pictures of my husband. They, you know, they're very familiar with my animals, which they still are. I will always overshare about my animals. But then I had the experience of like getting divorced and like having a parent die and moving and like starting this whole new life. And I remember searching something unrelated at the time and then finding out that there was a certain forum where people were speculating about my my divorce. And that was just sort of this feeling of like being utterly exposed. And I just felt like, okay, if I ever put anyone on the internet again, like I better be marrying them. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to like talk about dating. I'm not going to talk about who I'm with. I'm not going to talk about, you know, I didn't go through like talking about roommates or things. I had all these transitions, you know, that people just didn't really know about. And I think I've sort of settled into a life now where I feel very like content and comfortable being like, I'm single now. And I think that like I'm really happy with where I am, and I've shared about my house and my my pets, but I just can't really go there again to like having people so involved in my personal life that if there's a big shift, I feel like that people feel like they need to know about it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, so yeah. For me, I think being really open for me now means like being open with my design, being open with my ideas. I like doing like Instagram lives every now and then where we talk about the work. For me, it's being really open about the work now and not so much about my personal life. I think I do share things about like my home because I bought this really cute house recently and I had to share like, look at my purple door and like, you know, and look at my cute dog. I adopted a little dog named Hattie and I still have Henry who was very, you know, much a part of my first blog, my cat. So there's just been a shift away from, you know, letting people so far into my personal life. And now it's just more about the work that I'm doing. I'm like, utterly in love with what I do. So I think about it all the time, you know, like Charm Patterns is probably my baby. And so sharing that is like sharing baby pictures for me, you know, like that is, that is me. And that's enough of like showing people who I am for me.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, we get a huge sense of who you are as a person from the way that you're sharing now. And of course, we followed you throughout your journey too. But I think that it's different for everybody, right? We all have different boundaries. And especially if you're a business versus being somebody who's just connecting with other sewists online, maybe in that case, you'll share more of your personal life. But it's really about whatever works for you. And I think the takeaway here is just that nobody should feel pressured to overshare or undershare, and try not to speculate about other people on the internet.
Yes.
It's not fun.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling. It's a very weird feeling.
This episode of Love to Sew is sponsored by Spoonflower. Planning on sewing a me-made look for an upcoming holiday party? Spoonflower can help. Choose from fabrics like satin and celosia velvet for a custom luxe look. Get fabric inspiration for your holiday look by checking out Spoonflower's recent design challenge featuring winter flora. You can check out the winners of this design challenge at spoonflower.com.
Spoonflower's most popular sale of the year is back. Save 50% on fat quarters now through November 10th. What can you make with a fat quarter? More like, what can't you make? Tea towel calendars and family heirloom recipe tea towels are great for the gift-giving season. Or try out your favorite design on a fat quarter of lightweight cotton twill or dogwood denim for a pop of color on the pocket of your Persephone pants.
When you shop from hundreds of thousands of designs in the Spoonflower marketplace, you support a community of over 20,000 artists around the globe, all while maintaining a slim eco footprint via Spoonflower's digital on-demand printing process.
Did you know the textile industry is the number two polluter of fresh water in the world? And on average, it takes 102 liter bottles of water to produce 5 yards of conventional fabric. At Spoonflower, their processes use less than a thimbleful of water to print the same amount of fabric.
Love to Sew listeners can enter for a chance to win a $500 Spoonflower gift card by going to try.spoonflower.com/love to sew to enter. That's try.spoonflower.com/love to sew. Guys, why wouldn't you enter? $500!
Go to try.spoonflower.com/love to sew.
But I will say, you know, the other way I feel like I really connect with people is through teaching, you know, like in-person teaching. I do a lot of workshops. And for me, that's where like the really personal connection happens. Because I get to meet people who have been sewing from my patterns for years, and we spend, you know, days together getting to know each other. And I'm not, you know, I don't mean to give the impression that I'm really tight-lipped about my personal life to everyone. You know, I feel like in those settings, I feel really comfortable talking with people about everything about my life. And, you know, we have lunch together and, we, you know, like we just really get to know each other. So for me, that's how I feel a lot of that personal connection is really like getting together with people and teaching them and sewing together for 3 days.
Yeah, it's true. You form very strong bonds when you spend multiple days together in a sewing marathon.
It's true. You never know what's going to come out of people's mouths.
Yeah, it's so true. So to wrap up our conversation about blogging and social media and everything, do you have any advice or tips for people out there who want to share more about what they're making, or maybe want to take on a challenge like a Julie and Julia style challenge, like you mentioned, where they share a bunch of things or make a bunch of things?
That's interesting. I mean, I think for me, when I first started, I found the most sort of structure through offering tutorials. So I think, you know, if there's anything that you feel like you can offer early on that will really be valuable to people in their own sewing education, like you mentioned, the gathered skirt tutorial, that for me was like my first sort of aha moment of like, oh, I get how to do this and I feel like I could teach it and kind of come up with my own spin on it. And that was the thing that I felt like I was offering to people. So I think early on, it's like whatever, you know, what do I have to offer? That may be just sharing what you've made and sharing your tips about certain patterns. It may be doing a whole, you know, sort of long form tutorial or a video. Yeah, the question about Julie and Julia style, that's really interesting because I really feel like that was such an like such a timely thing in that sort of era. And it's, it's, you know, it's hard for me to sort of imagine anyone doing that sort of experiment now because it seemed like it was very like 2008, you know? but something like that does give structure to your work, which I think helps too. If you can give yourself, you know, a goal of, you know, I want to blog this type of pattern, I want to blog these five patterns, or whatever it is, or I just want to blog patterns from 1962, whatever it is, you know, having a theme and a goal and then something you can offer, I think is would be my top tips.
Those are great. Yeah, I think the commitment is the thing that I was referencing with the Julia and Julia, just, you know, having that plan that you're going to do X for this amount of time or whatever it is. And that can really help with the structure, like you said.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, part of that is just keeping to a content schedule, which, you know, if you're on a blog or if you're going to YouTube or you're going to just post on Instagram, whatever it is, you know, you need to be on a schedule, but not such a schedule that you start to annoy people.
Or yourself.
Or yourself. Yeah. Or drive yourself crazy.
So let's jump into your style a little bit more. You mentioned that you love the 50s era. Obviously, you love vintage fashion. And I have to say, you always look amazing and so put together. So we'd love to chat with you a bit more about your style and who you look for inspiration with your style.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is really interesting in terms of the conversation we were just having too about sort of like the evolution of blogging. Because when I first started out, I almost felt like I didn't want to fully commit to a vintage style or full vintage. And I think I sort of took pride in the fact that like I dressed vintage, but I had like an edge going on still. And, you know, I had like messy hair or like I had these scuffed ankle boots that I wore with every dress. And so people who remember and I wore these like chunky glasses and I had these like, you know, little Betty bangs that were always messy. I think people who, you know, really liked my early blogging days, you know, they will often mention that to me too. Like, oh, I miss, you know, old Gertie. Because I sort of had an evolution of when I wrote my early books and modeled for those, my editor at the time, who was amazing, also really felt like the style had to be somewhat approachable. And it couldn't be full I Love Lucy, which is what we used to say. But I felt at a certain point like I was kind of holding myself back from my like complete vision or fantasy for what this would be. This is a word I use a lot in the studio is the fantasy. You have to feel the fantasy. So I was not fully feeling the fantasy. I was kind of, I think a lot of people do this in their personal style. They're like holding themselves back for some reason. You know, like I hear a lot of people say, I can't pull off red lipstick. You hear that a lot. Like, I can't pull that off like you can. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm pulling it off, but I just did it. You know, like I just decided to do it, to wear red lipstick. And anyone can wear red lipstick and anyone can do full vintage style. It's just a matter of like, do you want to and do you want to commit to it? So at a certain point, I think this was sort of around the era that we were shooting my latest book, Gertie Sews Jiffy Dresses, and around the time I started Charm Patterns, that I felt like I wanted to go full glamour vintage. Like I wasn't going to like have this sort of internal holding back that I felt before. And so at that time, I started working with a new photography team based in Brooklyn called Shameless. They do primarily pinup and boudoir photography. So they know all about vintage glamour. And I started working with a new hairstylist too for my shoots. Hairstyling by Melissa is her Instagram handle. And she just really transformed, like that whole team really transformed the photos into my sort of like ultimate fantasy. So Jiffy Dresses is the first time I feel like I really went full vintage. And I did, you know, worth mentioning that I did all the styling on that myself. So all the shoes, jewelry, hats, and all you see, I did that. And so we had sort of a team who was making this fantasy happen. So I guess what I'm getting at is that I've had a personal evolution of kind of holding myself back from full vintage. And now I try not to ever hold myself back. What we're trying to achieve is like the most glamorous vintage you can imagine. Because it's all about the fantasy, you know, like for me, I know a lot of people are all about sewing for like every day and, you know, and I am all about sewing for every day and I wear the things I sew every day, but I also For me, there needs to be an element of glamour and fantasy there.
And I mean, that really does come through in all of your photos on your website, Charm Patterns, and on your Instagram. Like, the fantasy is real. We can see it. It is very cool. We love the way that you dress and your style and the way that you present yourself. The question that comes to mind for me is, like, are you in full glam all the time? Like, do you go to the grocery store in your, like, full vintage style, or do you have sort of a middle ground where, you know, you kind of have a casual style alter ego?
Yes. And I'll tell you my deep, dirty secret, which is I love sweatpants, which is like, sweatpants are amazing. And the thing is, when I'm traveling, it is sort of like a double life, because I do a lot of traveling, as I mentioned, to teach. And so I'll have, you know, I have to bring like the full, I call it full drag, full Gertie. You know, I have to go into like full Gertie for teaching. So I'll set my hair the night before, I do my makeup, I wear, you know, the eyelashes, I wear the dress, I wear the heels. But then as soon as I get back to my hotel room, that is all coming off, and it is all about the sweatpants. So, yeah. So when I'm traveling, all I pack is, like, I make sure I have enough fake eyelashes. I have my curlers. I have like 10 dresses and sweatpants. And that's pretty much what I travel with. There's like no in between.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm glad to hear that, to be honest, that you do get some time to relax and wear sweatpants like everybody else.
Well, and also there's sort of a middle ground too of, you know, right now I'm going into a sort of teaching hiatus, I will say, for about 6 months, where I'm just going to be working in the studio every day. Right now, like, for instance, I'm wearing a popover dress, which is sort of like a very casual dress from my latest book. And then I didn't really do anything with my hair or makeup. You know what I mean? So, and with flats. So there is a middle ground too of like running around town. I don't need to put that kind of pressure on myself to do, you know, my hair and makeup every single day.
I really love your tip too about not holding back with your style. We did an episode a couple months ago about finding your dream style and creating your dream wardrobe and encouraging our listeners to really think about how they want to dress and present themselves and just go for it, because that's one of the beautiful things with sewing, is that you can create what you actually want and you can just completely give in to whatever your fantasy is. So thank you for encouraging our listeners to do that too.
Yeah, I think it's so important. I mean, one of the comments that I get a lot on social media is people will say something like, on a picture of me dressed a certain way, they'll say, I wish women still dressed like that. And I'll say, well, I'm a woman and I am dressed like that right now. So you can too. You know what I mean? There's this sort of like misconception, I think, from people, not necessarily men, though there are, you know, your fair share of men are going to be like, oh, that was the day, you know, back in the day when women dressed like women. And that's not what I'm talking about right now. I'm talking more about women saying like, oh, I wish women still dressed like that now so that I could dress like that too, I think is what they're saying.
Right.
And the thing is, like, you can. We all are. You know, like, people who use my patterns, you know, they don't necessarily dress like this every day. But if you see a style and you want to try it out, I think the fear is that people are going to laugh at you. And I have never had anyone laugh at me for what I'm wearing. They are more just like, where do I get that? How can I get that? You know, like, that's the reaction you get. So I think just letting go of that fear of people thinking you look silly or, you know, like too much. You have to let go of that.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to talk a little bit about your pattern line, Charm Patterns, because I mean, you have had the opportunity to offer your patterns in a lot of different ways over the years, through your books, through Butterick and Simplicity, but now you have Charm Patterns, which is fairly new. Over the last couple of years, you've developed these patterns. And can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what they can expect from that line and what kind of garments you offer?
Yeah, I would love to. My favorite thing in the world is to talk about charm patterns. So I might never stop if you get me started. So you're right. I had the opportunity to publish a lot of patterns when I started Charm Patterns through my books and through Butterick and Simplicity. And I am so glad that I had that opportunity, because I spent about 6 years really learning how to successfully draft and put out patterns, but with the support of, you know, a third party like my publisher or Butterick, who were kind of guiding me and helping me through it. So it was sort of like I was just a little baby and learning how to do it all. And then I got to the point where I felt like I wanted to see what I could do without that support, if that makes any sense. So for the first time, I was really curious if I didn't have those sort of constructs in place of a publisher, what would I do? If I could hire my own photographer, if I could hire the illustrator, if I could make the size chart, if I could control, I realize I'm sounding like a complete control freak here, and I am a big control freak. For the first time, I really wanted to see if I were the complete creative director of this project, what would it look like? And the answer is Charm Patterns. So for the first time, I was hiring people myself and publishing myself. And the goal for Charm Patterns was to go complete vintage glamour. I wanted everything to just be as beautiful and luxurious and glamorous as possible while still being accessible to the modern home seamstress.
And it really does come across. You've captured your style completely with your branding and your website. And of course, the patterns are amazing. Like, you just released the Liz dress this year, and it's this beautiful feminine dress with a shelf bust and all of the fabrics you choose. I mean, again, we're feeling the fantasy.
Thank you.
And you also offer cup sizing for your new patterns, right?
I do. And that was one of the things that was going to be most important to me, I realized, when I started out. And I think that comes from teaching these workshops for so many years, was that I realized that one of the biggest obstacles to people getting a good fit while they were sewing was not having cup sizes in the majority of patterns. So I started with 4 cup sizes, which was pretty ambitious, because it's more than most companies who have cup sizes do. And now we've expanded to 5. So they generally fit A through H cups, which is a really good, strong range. And then we have 10 dress sizes. So the thing I'm really proud of with Charm Patterns is that we have a combined 50 sizes when you think of the dress and the cup combinations.
That's amazing. I'm sure that's so helpful for people, especially working with patterns where you're going for a more fitted silhouette and then not having to make a bunch of adjustments to get the bust fit right.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I think another thing that you just mentioned, the fitted silhouette, I think knowing what to expect in terms of ease in built into the pattern was really important to me with Charm Patterns too. So I always have a really detailed finished garment measurement chart with a description of why those measurements are what they are. So I call it the ease profile. So for things like the Jane set, which is a stretch jumpsuit we did based on a 50s jumpsuit, that is an unusual garment in that it has negative ease. So in that ease profile, I describe what is negative ease, what does it mean, and what kind of fabric do you need to use to get that fit. But for something like the Liz dress, it has, I think, about 1 inch of ease, which isn't a lot. But I explain in that ease profile why it is that minimal amount of ease and how to size up or down if you want more or less ease.
That is so helpful. I mean, I'm sure everyone can relate to the experience of looking at that finished garment measurement chart and thinking, why is there 4 inches of ease here? Why is this number this way? Like, that's not going to fit me. Something weird's going to happen. And then you end up making decisions that maybe end up in a garment that doesn't fit as well. But if you knew what the reasoning was behind the ease that's been, you know, decided for each size, then you can actually feel confident moving forward with your make.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, what I tell people is that the finished measurements are just another piece of information to help you make decisions about your garment. So if you see it and you think that 1 inch of ease isn't going to be enough for you, that means that you have that piece of information you need to now size up or make an adjustment or whatever it is. You know, it's not dictating anything to you. It's just giving you the tools that you need to make the decisions about the fit, because fit is so personal.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to know what the process is like, or how long the process takes to design the types of patterns that you offer, because they are quite involved. There are a lot of style lines. There's a lot of structure. There's, you know, you really do accentuate curves. So I'm curious, like, how long does it take to get a pattern from conception to actually getting it to print and getting it out into the world?
It takes a really long time. And I'm trying to kind of, you know, minimize that time, but still be as thorough as we are. I think the Liz dress that you mentioned is a really good example of the timeline that we've worked with in the past. And that took almost a year. The idea for the Liz dress, which is what's called a shelf bust style, very popular in the 50s. And it has sort of a line that goes under the breasts that, and then like some sort of like detail, like a band or something that kind of looks like your bust is up on a shelf. And it was very popular and it's a really beautiful style. It requires really close attention to fit in the bust, obviously. So this dress was based on a vintage dress that I bought. And I love looking at vintage dresses for inspiration. I bought this dress off of Etsy, and it's by a brand called Kahala, which is a Hawaiian brand from the 50s. And it was just so beautiful. And I did post a picture of me in this dress, and the response was overwhelming. Like, we need that pattern. And I totally agreed and started working on it from there. And for this dress, I worked with a pattern maker who we worked really closely to get the fit to work for modern bodies. And by that, I mean, we had to change some of the style lines to work for our size range. So something like the lower cup on the Liz dress, it had a dart in it. And looking at that dart, it looks okay in a B cup, but I knew that once we graded it up to an H cup, it was going to be such a weird little dart with these like tiny legs and like a lot of dart excess that there was no way you're going to be able to sew it without getting a pucker. So we do things like turn that dart into a seam. So it's now a three-piece cup. So now we have what's essentially a bra in a dress that needs to fit 50 different sizes. So this was just a really long 8-month process of getting the fit right on everything from a size 2 A cup up to a size 20 H cup. And you have to remember that includes things like a size 2 H cup and a size 20 A cup. So we are testing all different combinations and making sure it looks beautiful on all those different cup sizes. So it's really a long process. And in the end, we ended up working with a bra grader because we were not happy with the shape of the cup and the way it was fitting all those sizes. So I ended up hiring someone to consult, and I ended up bringing her on board as our pattern maker now because she was so amazing. She made those cups look so good on every cup size. And I'll never forget the first time I tried that pattern on revised in my size. And it was just such a relief and such a wonderful moment to see the cups looking as good as they are. So it's just, that's all to say, it's a really long process. And there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes to make sure that everything looks as good on all sizes as it looks at the photo shoot.
I can only imagine, especially the sample sewing as well. Every time you want to try something, you have a lot of pieces to work with, a lot of fabric to work with. So it's impressive what you've accomplished with charm patterns so far. And I'm just looking at the picture of you in the Liz dress with the black body and the gold bust and the little gold under the ruffle on the side. And it is stunning. So we'll definitely be sharing some pictures in our show notes.
Thank you. And yeah, I do want to mention about that picture. One of the things we're also trying to do is make our patterns interchangeable with each other. So that dress that you're referencing is actually a mashup of a Liz bodice with a L'Amour sarong skirt. And the idea in this series that we're working on, I'm calling it the L series because they all start with an L so far, is that all of those patterns have a similar ease profile so they can be made to be interchangeable. So you can make those patterns mix and match amongst themselves too, which is really, it really expands your options.
Oh, that is so fun. So you can put bodices on different skirts and vice versa.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. And we're working on our third L pattern now, which is going to even take it even further. And we're super excited about. Yeah.
Any hints for our listeners?
Yeah. Let's see. So this L is it's based on a pattern by another Hawaiian designer, and it's one of my favorite vintage styles of all time that I have been kind of holding back for many years because I never felt like I was quite ready to do it. And once we did Liz and had a really good sort of bustier style fit, the great thing is we can now build on that style. And that was the moment I was like, okay, I'm ready to do this style that I've been holding back on. And the cool thing is it will have two bottoms. So it will have a skirt and something else that you can mix and match.
Ooh, that's exciting. We can't wait to see.
Yes, I'm sure your diehard fans will probably have an idea of what you're referencing. they're going to be really excited.
Do you have a favorite part in the process of making patterns?
Do I have a favorite part? I mean, I love the whole process, I will say. I couldn't do this if I didn't love it. But I would say the part that we're at right now for our next photo shoot is kind of my favorite part, which is where we are – I'm saying we because I now have a full-time employee, Melisha, who I work with. And so I'm not using the royal we, I promise. We are now in that feeling the fantasy stage, which is – kind of my favorite. The photo shoot is about 5 weeks out. We have a ton of sewing to do, but we are kind of coming to the end of finalizing the patterns themselves. We're doing model fittings. We are actually starting to create the garments and see it come together and visualizing the photo shoot and the styling and how it is all going to come together for me is probably the most exciting part.
Yeah, it always is so fun choosing fabrics and making all the samples. And it's a very exciting time in the process.
It's also really frustrating, too. I mean, I know it sounds like the fabric shopping, I find for some reason really, really stressful. And I feel silly complaining about it because I get to go into New York and go to the garment district and go to these wonderful fabric stores and, you know, buy a full suitcase of fabric. And that sounds to most sewers like it would be really, really fun. And it is fun, but it's the decision making. It's that like final, like, this is what's going to be in the photo for this pattern for, you know, eternity. Not eternity. You can always redo it. But you know what I mean? Like, it just feels really final.
It does feel dramatic like that for eternity. Making this choice.
Like, this is it.
You mentioned fabric shopping. So I have to ask, do you have any favorite fabric shops in New York that you might want to plug for our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. My absolute favorite shop in New York is B&J Fabrics. And they are probably the most high end, but also the most well curated and beautiful and open and airy shop in New York with the best customer service. And I can say this because I've been working with them for a long time, over 10 years now, since I wrote my first book. And I went looking for a fabric sponsor for that book because I thought it would be a cool way to not have to buy all that fabric and also to work with a sponsor who was interested in being more visible to the home sewing community. I went to one store, which I shall not name, who basically laughed in my face and said that they would not even do that for Beyonce. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
That's not true. Yeah, they're probably eating their words now.
And then I was like, I don't know how I got the courage after that to ask another store. But I went to B&J, which was actually my first choice because it's my favorite store. And I said, would you, you know, consider sponsoring this book and providing the fabric? And I kid you not, they said, absolutely, take whatever you need. Wow. I was just like, are you kidding me? So that's just to say that they have been like a really big supporter of not just me, but the home sewing community for a long time. And they have worked with me to sponsor my books, but I also buy a lot of fabric there. They don't just give me free fabric. It's not quite as it's not quite the fantasy it sounds like. But they are truly amazing and really have been just like so interested in home sewing. I mean, I think when people think about the garment district, they think just high fashion or Broadway. But B&J is really interested in what home sewers are doing. So that's my long plug to check them out.
That is awesome. Helen and I are heading to New York next week. So we might have to make a trip out there and visit B&J.
I have been there before. It is delightfully curated and airy, as you said. It feels like a breath of fresh air for a fabric store, you know?
Yeah, it's really wonderful. It's just so well organized. So
yeah,
I love them.
So after all of this conversation about everything that you're doing and working on, we kind of want to hear what a day in the life is like for you.
Well, the fun thing is that every day is a little bit different. Like I mentioned, I'm kind of going into a teaching hiatus right now. So for now, I'm just in the studio, which is what I really wanted. Until about a year ago, I had my studio out of my house. And that was really challenging. I think I realized the day that I got the Night and Day dress delivered and 35 cartons of patterns were delivered to my little 900 square foot house, I realized this was no longer sustainable. And so I now have a studio across the river from Beacon in Newburgh, New York, and that's where we work every day. And for the most part, I am going into the studio. I am working with freelancers, mostly by email. So I have a team of, I think, 7 or 8 freelancers at this point. So illustrators, graphic designer, technical editor, technical illustrator, envelope illustrator. So there are a lot of people who I work with. There's a lot of people on this team. And so we're going back and forth, and our pattern maker, of course, we're going back and forth about the new patterns. We are testing patterns right now. So we're trying things out in muslin, making sure everything's looking good. We're sewing samples for the shoot. We are developing new designs. We're shipping out orders. We're answering customer emails. And that's a day in the studio. I mean, I think if it's a day teaching, that's, you know, it could be, I could be in Berlin and I could be walking to a studio along the river. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's always different. And that is what I love most about what I do, is it's a lot of variety.
Yeah, and I can picture you in your beautiful full glam fantasy walking the river in Berlin. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mentioned that because I did have a moment when I went to Berlin to teach for the first time this past summer, and I was really jet lagged, and I was, you know, going into teaching 2 or 3 workshops in a row, and I was kind of tired. But then I was like looking at this beautiful river, and I was like, just so grateful, you know, that this is what I get to do, and that I've gotten to see the world and meet people everywhere doing it.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. I'm curious now that we're at the end of this conversation. I know you mentioned that you have another pattern coming up soon, but what is coming up next for you, say 5 years, 10 years down the line? Where do you see yourself going in the sewing world or elsewhere?
Oh my gosh. I really feel like I need to sit down and write my 5-year plan, because that question just gave me so much anxiety.
Oh, I'm sorry. You don't have to answer
it. No, it's okay. No, I'm going to. Well, I think, you know, the thing for me is I am really, with Charm Patterns right now, I'm trying to like build up a library. You know, we're still pretty new. We just hit our 2-year mark in existence. So we are just trying to get to the point where we're on like a real solid schedule of releasing a certain number of patterns every year. And so for now, I'm really focused on, you know, just releasing more patterns to the point where we have a whole like charm library. So that's really important to me right now. But also, you know, as I mentioned earlier, just keeping everything as thorough and beautiful as it has been up to this point. You know what I mean? Not cutting corners. You know, we're working on a pretty complicated pattern next, and like making sure that our instruction booklets are, you know, as detailed and comprehensive as people have come to expect. So kind of upholding those standards while releasing more is kind of my goal right now. I think that in terms of books, like I'll never really be done writing books. So, and I have several ideas for new ones. So that's another thing that I'll always be doing more of.
That is awesome. Well, Helen and I have really enjoyed following you over the years, and we really look forward to seeing what you do in the future.
Thank you so much.
Tell our listeners where they can find you online, where they can find out about your workshops and your patterns and everything else you have going on.
Yeah. So my website is now charmpatterns.com. So you can buy our patterns there. You can also link to my blog where I announce my workshops, get on my mailing list where you will be first in the know about workshops and new releases. I also put everything up on my Facebook page as well as my Instagram page, which is at Gertie18.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today. This was such a great convo. I know our listeners are going to love hearing from you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode of Love to Sew is sponsored by Spoonflower. Remember, you can create the wardrobe of your dreams using Spoonflower fabrics.
Enter now through November 19th for a chance to win a $500 shopping spree on Spoonflower. Love to Sew listeners can enter the giveaway by going to try.spoonflower.com/love to sew to enter. That's try.spoonflower.com/love to sew to enter the $500 giveaway.
Go do it. That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helenscloset.ca.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
If you're loving the show and want to help us out, why not buy us a coffee with your support on Patreon? Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info. Our new bonus episode is coming out in just a couple of short weeks.
Woo! Thank you to our amazing podcast team, Sam Humphrey and Melanie Brister. And thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Do you really want all of these details? I feel like I'm going to go on forever. No, that's
excellent. Okay. We're going to have a lot of follow-up questions, but okay. We love getting all the details.
Okay. All right.